Hello and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network, where you can find all your latest on the Cavaliers as we get into this football season. Remember to follow and subscribe to the Who's On podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcast. While you're there, why not leave a five-star review while you're at it too? All right. Well, for the first time, we have a repeat guest. It is, of course, Greg Medea covering the Wahoos for the Daily Progress. Greg, you know, you didn't learn your lesson the first time, so now you're back. We're doing it again.
Honored. What can I say? Honored to be back on the Who's On podcast.
Well, I wanted to bring you on this week because this is a bit of an interesting matchup that we have here against Coastal Carolina. Virginia going down to Conway, South Carolina on Saturday to take on the Chanticleers. And reason it's so interesting is, you know, it's a power four, five, however you want to say it, team going and facing a group of five team on the road, which has been interesting in the past for a lot of different teams. You think back to Virginia Tech going to Old Dominion, you think about UNC going to play App State, and several others. And you've got some experience covering, you know, a JMU team that has had success in, you know, when they were in the FCS level going up to face the FBS level. But and it's a little bit different. And, you know, we talked to some players too about kind of what that dynamic is like between the group of five and the power five. So that's kind of where we're going to start. We're going to start with our press conference rewind. Here is Tony Elliott talking about Coastal Carolina. And as Greg pointed out, this is a question he asked about Coastal Carolina just in the group of five right now. I think probably one of the most interesting thing about the new college football playoff is the race for that group of five spot in the college football playoff, because it could be so many teams. And at the end of the year, there's going to be a lot of debate about which team that should be. They're already, you know, every week I see a new team, Boise State, you get thrown out there, or, you know, you could even make a case for Coastal Carolina if they get a win this weekend and down the road and so on and so on. So here's Tony Elliott talking about just what the Cavaliers are up against, especially in this new era of college football.
The message was that this football team we're getting ready to play believes they have a path to the playoff, you know, which they do. And if they win every game on their schedule and they beat a power four at home, then they're going to have a chance to get into the playoffs. So it's a prideful bunch down there that's playing for a lot.
Greg, you asked Coach Elliott that question. I just want to, what's your take on, I guess, the group of five race for the college football playoff and just how Coastal Carolina kind of plays into that and how their motivations play into this game?
I think it ups the stakes, right? I mean, I don't know how you feel, but to me, it heightens the importance of a matchup like this, especially when you consider what some of the other group of five schools have already done, right? Northern Illinois going to Notre Dame and winning. Of course, you had Memphis beating Florida State last weekend. So it's something where if you're a group of five school like Coastal Carolina, you got to show you can play too against the big boys. So this is their opportunity to do so, and they're going to approach it that way, right? This is their one chance against a power conference school to show, hey, not only can we hang, we can beat these guys. So to me, that's what makes this matchup so intriguing. You know, it's an ESPN Plus game, but you think about what it means for a school like Coastal Carolina, it's way bigger than a non-linear TV game. It's probably, if you consider, you know, what they can do in a Sun Belt, and they got to win all their games, right? That's the one thing with these group of five schools is you got to win all your games, except unless you're maybe Boise State, which took Oregon to the brink.
Exactly. But
you've got to run the table pretty much to get that playoff spot if you're in a G5. So this is as important as a game they'll play all season. And if you win it, you certainly boost your credentials. You certainly boost your credibility. You'll probably get some votes in the AP top 25. You'll probably get some votes in a coaches poll. So huge opportunity for Coastal Carolina.
Yeah. And it was interesting. You know, we talked to Cam Butler and Corey Thomas this week. Both of those guys played at group of five schools before, although they pointed out, of course, their teams, you know, Corey Thomas from Akron, Cam Butler from Miami, Ohio, they never got to host a power five team. So right, just the extra juice that adds. And that's exactly what Cam Butler said. Like, you know, he knows that's going to add a lot of extra juice. You know, you're going to have the fans there. And that's why, you know, we talked, you know, during this week, it's so important to get off to a fast start, especially with the crowd. You know, we'll hear from Tim Beck, actually, right now, the head coach at Coastal Carolina, just on the environment that he is expecting in Conway, South Carolina this week.
It's awesome. I think it's our fan base, the Conwave is super excited. Everybody's talking about it. It's going to be a great environment, probably one they haven't had in a long time. Maybe the BYU game, but that was during COVID and only 4,000 fans. This will be open, and so tickets are hard to come by. I can tell you that, and everybody's trying to get here. So it should be an electrifying event, and that's what college football is all about, man. At the end of the day, it's about the students and the fans and the players packing a college stadium on a Saturday afternoon and playing football.
Well, it's interesting. He mentioned, probably the biggest game that they've hosted, because you look back, the BYU game back in 2020, that was probably the biggest game they hosted, but no fans. And it was a game that came out of the blue because of course, in COVID, a lot of games just came out of nowhere. It had a lot of stakes, two ranked teams, but also not a Power Five team in BYU yet at the time. And also, they hosted Kansas a couple years back. Beat them actually. The final score of that game was 49-22. So they beat Kansas at home back in 2021. But at that time, they didn't have a chance to get to the college football playoffs. So that's what we're talking about. Adds that extra juice. What do you think it means just to host a game like this?
Yeah, Kansas wasn't exactly what it was last year in 2021. I know they're off to a slow start this season, but certainly when you consider all the other factors, and it's interesting, Virginia has a Coastal Carolina transfer on its roster, and Peyton Bunch. He said he was on the team for that BYU game, that impromptu BYU game after the Liberty game got scrapped when Liberty tested positive for COVID and two nationally ranked teams decided to play in a showcase game on national television. He said it was a wild atmosphere, but only, 5,000 people could be in the stands because the COVID, capacity restrictions at that time. So he was saying he expects it to be even crazier this weekend, full capacity crowd. I think they announced already that the game is sold out. And then you throw in all the playoff stuff and the implications that group of five teams have a little bit of hope, especially at this time of year. Huge opportunity for Coastal Carolina and probably the biggest game to this point. I mean, you can't discount games that had an impact when they won the Sun Belt title or they're chasing a bowl game when that program had just transitioned to the FBS. So there are important games, but when you look at what it could mean if this season turns out to be the way, Coastal Carolina would like it to be, if they go on and have an unbeaten run, certainly this game would stack up in history as one of the more important games and for the Chanticleers.
I was going to ask you had the chance to talk to Peyton Bunch. I was off doing other interviews, but you were talking to Peyton. Just kind of what does he think about kind of what to expect with this environment?
Yeah, he was saying he thinks it's going to be great. Family weekend. It's funny. He said his girlfriend still goes to school at Coastal Carolina. His grandparents live in Conway. He's like, they're torn about who to root for. So that
I
kind
was
of
going to
tells you,
say.
that tells you kind of exactly what the temperament of the area, the crowd, the community is. Tim Beck was saying that he expects just a lively atmosphere. He said tickets are so hard to come by for fans. I think Tony even mentioned too that UVA was having a hard time
Yes.
getting the proper ticket allotment that the Cavaliers
No,
were
he was
expecting
saying
to.
no extra tickets. They couldn't find him.
So yeah, so that tells you how juiced up the community is down there, and that should make for a great atmosphere, right? These games, let's be honest, Preston. Power four schools going to group of five schools are probably going to start fading away, becoming few and far between. But when they happen, it's pretty cool for college football. You don't see it a lot. You don't see it all the time. They're going to be less and less of them moving forward in this expanded college football playoff era and conferences not wanting their big boys to lose on the road, the power conferences, that is. So when they happen, it's pretty neat. And I think it makes for some good storylines, and let's kind of shine a light on what's going on at the mid-major level of the FBS.
Yeah. And you mentioned it there. It's already pretty well known. Jim Phillips, the ACC commissioner, doesn't want a lot of these games scheduled. He wants more, facing SEC, Big Ten, other Big 12 schools, even. He wants more of those kind of matchups in the non-conference schedule. And, It's funny because, just this week, Wake Forest canceled their series against Ole Miss after, getting blown out against them at home. And now they're going to play a home and home series with Oregon State. So it's interesting, just kind of, I guess, how that scheduling is going to work out in the future. We already seen with Virginia, they didn't schedule an out of conference opponent. They scheduled NC State down the line in the future. And that's kind of where they are at with their schedule now. But looking at Virginia's past record in group of five games and on the road, and it was kind of interesting that they've had so many over the years. Since 2000, they played 10 of them. Their record in those games, it's only 4-6. And in their last five games against group of five teams on the road, it is 1-4. Of course, their most recent one was at BYU, obviously known as Bronco Mendenhall's return out to Provo. And they lost 66-49. The defense gave up, more than 700 yards. We all remember that game. Brennan Armstrong gets hurt at the end. We all remember that one. And so just kind of looking back, I mean, what is at stake for Virginia going into this game? We've talked about that from the coastal side, but how about Virginia?
Yeah, I think for Virginia, right? If you win this game, you feel pretty good knowing exactly what the crowd is going to be, what's at stake for Coastal Carolina. If you can walk away with a win, that's a step in the right direction. You go into the bye week 3-1. I know when we talked before the season, we had looked at this stretch, right? This three-game stretch at Wake, home against Maryland, at Coastal Carolina, saying if you can take two or three in that stretch, you might give yourself a shot to go to a bowl game. So I think that's what's in play for Virginia, and that's you can't underestimate that. And as much as Virginia said they've tried to understand what's in play for Coastal Carolina and the playoff and everything else, they know it's a big game for the Virginia program too, if it wants to accomplish some of the things it wants to accomplish this year. So I think when you look at that big picture, right, you kind of got to have this one if you want to make sure you're in play for a bowl game. And you look at the last eight games, right? Then you're feeling okay. You feel like you can win, three of the last eight and get bowl eligible.
Yeah, the Lions started this week at 5.5 in favor of UVA. It's down to 3 now. So we've gone through the week, and that's kind of been typical for the UVA Lions this year. They've kind of fluctuated by 2, 3 points during the week. But interesting, ESPN analytics favor Coastal Carolina in this 57% to 42% for Coastal Carolina in favor of them. But Greg, we kind of talked about it earlier, but do you think we should have some more of these matchups? I know it's going away from it, but do you think this should still be a part of college football?
I think it's a tough sell for a Power Four program.
Yes.
As someone who covered James Madison when it was at the height of its level at the FCS, I can tell you there was a reason why they couldn't get FBS games in certain years, right? Nobody's running to play them because there's no benefit, which is almost the same as what it is playing a group of five team on the road in particular situations. I think UVA's got one at Old Dominion in 2028 that was part of a 2-for-1, similar to Coastal Carolina deal. So I don't think they're going away completely. I think it's going to be more rare. I think one thing you can think about with Virginia is maybe you start to see some group of five teams in state come to UVA. Maybe a little more frequently. I know I've spoken to some people in the athletic department, and that's something they don't want to run from. It's something Tony Elliott embraces, whether it's James Madison or ODU or even Liberty. I think you could see some more of that moving forward.
And it's interesting just looking at the landscape of college football, just in the state of Virginia, how much better those other teams have gotten. For the longest time, it was just Virginia and Virginia Tech in the
Yeah.
state. And now all these other teams moving up, Liberty, then JMU and Old Dominion. And you're kind of seeing their programs, step up, have big years, making bowl games consistently. And so it's competitive now.
And I think too with Virginia, if you're a program that strives to have seven home games a year, right? You're not wasting that one non-conference away game on a group of five opponent. You're either going to play a home and home with a big boy, or you're going to play a neutral site game and find a way to make some money. So that to me, that to me is why, in addition to not much benefit from playing on the road at a G5. Like that to me is why you might see those games fade away or just become really, really rare.
Yeah, I think that's probably where we're headed. We are headed to break down this matchup with Coastal Carolina. We're going to do that right after the break. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. My guest again, Greg Badia from the Daily Progress, covering the Wahoos all season long. Greg, let's dive into this matchup right now with Coastal Carolina. They're 3-0 on the season. We're going to talk about the actual football played on the field now. Wins over at Jacksonville State, home against William & Mary, speaking of Virginia, other Virginia programs, and at Temple last week. What have you made of just how they have played so far?
I think the thing that stands out is how they use their quarterback in the run game. Ethan Vasco, he's a transfer from Kansas. He's a Virginia native, Oscar Smith High School down in the 757. You look at him, big physical kid. When you think about Coastal Carolina over the last couple of years and their recent success, right? You think about Grayson McCall kind of slinging the ball all over the yard. It's different, right? They're running some speed options, some triple option, some quarterback zone read stuff. Heavy involvement in a quarterback run game. And to me, that's tricky. That's tough to prepare for. It's fascinating. Now, Virginia's got some defensive staff members that spent some time at the academy, so they know how to prepare for triple option and some of the option stuff they may see. But to me, that's the thing that stands out. Then you throw in, they got a couple of good running backs. They're deep at running back. Christian Washington has been the most productive this year. I know their starter has been out, but Christian Washington has come off the bench and done really well. Multiple touchdown games in each of the last two touchdowns against William & Mary, two touchdowns against Temple. Like the way they run the football, that's tough to stop, and Virginia better be ready to stop the run.
And you mentioned Vasco. A lot of these guys on this team are former Power Four players. They've transferred in. Vasco started his career at Kansas. Washington, a little different. He was at New Mexico before this, but you know, obviously a lot of transfer help on this Coastal Carolina team. And so, yeah, you mentioned Vasco, and it was interesting talking to Cam Butler because, you know, they had the first game against Richmond. You know, they didn't really get a lot of pressure on the quarterback. Some of that probably by design. Then against Wake Forest, they're bringing blitz and getting after the quarterback. They have six sacks. Then you go back to last game against Maryland, and, you know, it's more of a four-man rush again. And just talking to him, it seems like, you know, it really is just going to vary on the quarterback that they're facing. And obviously, the offensive, if you're running a lot of option, obviously you're not dropping back to pass a lot. So you're not probably not going to invite a lot of pass rush up the field. But in talking to him, it's interesting. You know, I asked him, what type of quarterback do you prefer facing? Because they faced a couple different types this year already. And, you know, I think by default, you know, most defensive players are going to say a quarterback that can't really run with the ball just because it adds another variable back there. How do you see just kind of this defense matching up against Vasco after watching him?
Yeah, they're going to have to really gang tackle. Like, to me, he's probably the most physical runner they've faced since Kyron Jones last year, and everybody saw how that went. I mean, I think Coastal Carolina's offensive line is pretty good, too. The right tackle is a transfer from NC State. You mentioned some of the power conference transfers, right? Their coach, Tim Beck, former offensive coordinator at Texas, at Ohio State, at NC State. Like, he's been around the block, right? He knows talent. He knows he probably has connections from those past stops that have funneled in some of those players. So it's a talented roster with guys who probably just wanted more opportunity to play than where they were at. And in this era in college football, that could make for a good thing if you get the chemistry and everything right. So I think the O-line is good. I mentioned the NC State transfer, Lindsey. The left tackle is a good player too, and he has a great name, Nick Del Grande. You can't come up with a better offensive line name than that. He's a preseason all Sunbelt kid. I think Virginia's defensive line is going to have to disrupt. And you saw it some against Wake Forest, especially when Wake was struggling to run the football. They were able to pin their ears back a little bit and send Butler and Bennett and those guys and blitz some extra defenders. Like, I think they're going to have to do some of that stuff to disrupt the option. The tricky thing with that, though, Preston, is if you don't stay home, if you don't stay assignment sound, you'll get beat. You look at some of the runs Coastal Carolina has ripped off. There's some long plays on option looks where the defense is in the wrong spot. So to me, that's a little bit of the worry. And they do have some skill on the outside. It's not a you know, every down option team. They'll give you those wrinkles and those looks out of the shotgun. But what you know, they're multifaceted too.
Yeah, well, we'll stay right there. We're going into key matchups now, and we'll start on the when Coastal Carolina has the ball and Virginia is playing against them. And based off of that, we know, and we should probably do a little bit of an injury update, Cam Robinson, the linebacker for Virginia, is expected to play against Coastal Carolina this week. That's a big boost for them, obviously, an athletic linebacker to get back him back out there. A couple other injury notes. You've got a couple offensive linemen down. Brian Stevens is fine. He's expected to play after he left the game. Ty Furnish is out of the game, so that probably means Uganda Nana is going to start at right guard. So Darian Harrison out for another game. I mean, it just, there's a ton of injuries, first of all.
Yeah.
I mean, I was joking, you know, they probably needed three medical tents against Maryland just because players are coming on and off. And I think there were players in the medical tent when another guy was coming off. Dre Walker, he's another one that is injured as well, an ankle injury. So a lot of injuries, but Cam Robinson will be on there. So is he up to full strength, though? Because with the option, you got to be able to cover sideline to sideline. And so is he healthy? And that's kind of the matchup that I'm watching out there. What is something that you're looking at when Coastal has the ball?
I think it's just how Virginia tackles Vasco. You're not going to be able just to throw one guy at him and hope you bring him down. So it's kind of a collective thing. And I guess with the option too, you need your defensive line to be disciplined. I mentioned it. So you got to win your battle up front and then stay disciplined to not get caught running the wrong way and the quarterback making an easy decision. Vasco is disciplined. He makes good decisions. It's going to be tough. And when he throws the ball, he doesn't turn it over, right? I think that's something that can't be overstated in this game is, you know, Coastal Carolina's in the top 20 in turnover margin in the FBS. Virginia is sixth worst. Like, that's a big discrepancy. And Virginia can't just give the ball away and give Vasco and that running game time to chew the clock and keep the game moving. You know what I mean? Virginia's got to make its possessions count.
Yeah, that's a great point. And looking also, you mentioned the defensive line. The defensive tackles this season have kind of, they've been interesting. They did not play great. They did not grade out well against Maryland. What have you made of that position? Obviously, you know, a lot of the focus on Jameer Carter coming back and, you know, his fifth season of college football. You look at Jason Hammond, Mike Diatta, Anthony Britton inside there. If you're talking about defensive line being disciplined, you know, that's a little bit of concern just with how those guys have played so far this season.
Yeah, it's really kind of been that way for the entire D line. I know Cam graded out pretty well against Maryland. I think same thing first week against Richmond. Chico Bennett's had some moments of disruption, had the sack against Wake Forest. He's had some quarterback pressures, some good blitzes, some good rushes off the edge. But kind of collectively, you'd like to see more disruption from that front without Virginia having to bring extra blitzers, right? That's what made that group really good in 2022 is – Butler, Bennett, they were able to get home without John Rodzinski having to call on James Jackson, or I guess it would have been Nick Jackson at that time. Nick Jackson.
Both the Jacksons.
To blitz, or Sanker to blitz, or Clary to blitz. Now to do that, and you saw in a Wake Forest game, you're having to bring extra defenders. And that makes it tough because then that puts your cornerbacks and your safeties in some tough spots, whether you're playing zone or man coverage. And man coverage, you're one-on-one with probably little help if you're bringing extra defenders. So to me, that's what has to change when you get in those passing situations. Bennett and Butler, and then to an extent, Carter and Hammond or Diatta, you got to get home. You got to get home, and you got to find a way to get to the quarterback without your defensive coordinator having to help you out with pressures.
I'd be interesting to see. I don't know the exact numbers, and then we'll move to the other side of the ball. But Ben Smiley's a guy that seems like in his limited snaps this year, has gotten a decent amount of pressure upfield. It just, you know, he missed a lot of camp. He was unhealthy. Yeah. He had a sack in the first game. It just, he hasn't played a ton this year, but be interested to see if he gets a couple more snaps going forward. All right, flipping to the other side of the ball when Virginia has the ball, the key matchup. I mean, I don't know if there's any other way to put this. It's the offensive line versus Coastal Carolina. Coastal has, I think, 9 sacks this season. Yeah. Virginia struggled a lot against that Maryland front. I know they only gave up 1 sack. They had 7 quarterback pressures, though. Anthony Calandra was pretty much under pressure all night. So it's really how that offensive line stands up, especially, you know, a banged up offensive line. You know, Tony Elliott said Mikhail Boley's getting closer, but how close is he really? And then Ty Furnish being out, you got Anana going in there at right guard. Is Brian Stevens fully healthy after suffering an injury in the Maryland game? That's the side I'm looking at, and when Virginia has the ball.
What's crazy is Boley's fill-in has been probably their second best offensive lineman behind Brian Stevens to start the year. You look at the Pro Football Focus grades, and Whitmer's the only offensive lineman to grade out within the top 10 offensive players in each of the three games for Virginia. So that kind of tells you like Boley's been down, but they've gotten pretty good production from Jack Whitmer, the former tight end who's transitioned very nicely and really helped the team out this year.
Well, and that strikes an interesting question because if Boley comes back, this is something that I've had people ask me, do you find a spot for Whitmer on the offensive line, maybe move someone else around and just to get him on the field?
Yeah, I wonder what they do. It's a great question, and probably one that we need to do our jobs and ask Tony Elliott and Des Kitchings. But I know when Boley comes back, Whitmer's gonna still play some tackle because Boley's not gonna be caught up to speed on the conditioning part to be able to
Sure.
withstand a full game. Whenever Boley comes back, maybe it's the week after the bye week, maybe it's further down the road. But I think you got to think about you don't want to move Whitmer again, right? He's already made a significant position transition. Can you move Boley to the right side? Can you move, can you move him inside? Like it's all fair question. And Terry Heffernan's done a good job considering all the injuries. Like we haven't even talked about the guys down on the depth chart who have been hurt that thought, that Virginia thought maybe could be a factor in a rotation. Ethan Sipe, broken bone in the foot. The Dartmouth transfer, Drake Metcalf. Who knows?
Huge
If he was
one, huge
healthy,
one.
he might have been a starter at
Yeah.
guard. He went down in the spring. So Charlie Patterson's another one. He had moved to guard from tackle. You thought maybe he could get some reps. So they've lost a lot of their depth, and there's been some shuffling behind that first five. So that to me has been interesting and tough on them. So it'll be when Boley, if and when he gets back, we'll see. That to me is something they're going to have to figure out because you don't want to waste Whitmer if he's giving you good reps.
Exactly. And that's, you always hear from offensive line coaches, and especially, during my time covering Virginia, it's the best five on the field. It's not, the best left tackle, the best left guard, the best center. It's the best five on the field. And so Whitmer and everything right now points to him being one of your best five. How do you get him on the field? Assuming Mikhail Boley, who has been good in the past, is one of your best five too at this point. How do you get him on the field? So those are interesting questions that, yeah, I probably best to wait until we actually see a healthy Boley back in the
Yeah.
lineup, and then we'll kind of see, how they tinker with it going forward from there. But I know Terry Heffernan in the past, he's talked a lot about they do cross train these guys. They have worked at different positions, so if that's something they have to do, they'll explore that route down the road. All right, players to watch. We'll go one from Coastal, one from Virginia each. We'll start with Coastal, and we'll start with you, Greg.
Yeah, I think on defense, Will Whitson. He's an edge rush type guy. Three sacks a year ago, really disruptive guy, veteran for that defense, a lot of tackles. He's a pretty good player that Virginia's going to have to block, whether it's Whitmer or Blakestein.
Yeah, you mentioned him earlier, Christian Washington, the running back,
Yeah.
transfer from New Mexico. He has been great for them early on this year. And we saw against Wake Forest, they struggled to take down Claiborne. And I
Oh,
was
yeah.
kind of Demond Claiborne, and I was, saying up in the box, I'm like, if I'm Wake, just keep handing it to that guy because they cannot stop you going up the middle. And obviously Maryland, not as much of a run team. Richmond, the same thing. And so, this is probably the next best running back they've faced since they played Claiborne. So it's going to be interesting to see how they can kind of slow down Washington or how they match up against Washington, especially with the interior, that defensive line. All right, player to watch for Virginia. Who's got your eye this weekend in Conway?
Yeah, Malachi Fields, you want to see him bounce back. Charlottesville native, tough week last week. Let's just call it like it is. Had the fumble, had what 100-yard games back to back against Richmond and Wake Forest, only 36 yards last week. You want to see him get back to what he was doing the first 2 weeks. Malachi Fields, player to watch, because I think he does bounce back, right? Too good not to.
Yeah, I that's a great one. The thing with Malachi is I think he ended up with 11 targets. I think that's the number he ended up with in that game. But some of those targets, like, were Calandry just throwing the ball out of bounds. And so I just don't know if they were getting him the ball enough, if they were, getting him in the right positions. I talked about it earlier in the week with Mike Barber, about on the goal line, they have thrown one goal line or one pass into the end zone to Malachi Fields or Tyler Neville this season. And it was in that Maryland game. Fields ran a slant, even though the defensive back had inside coverage on him. Those are situations where you want to see Malachi Fields do a fade and to the back, pylon and just throw it up to him.
And boy, they need to get better in the red zone. Holy
It's.
cow. They can't keep coming away with field goals or turning the ball over. They got to start scoring touchdowns. Coastal Carolina averages 41 points a game. You're going to have to keep pace somewhat. I mean, I don't know if they're going to score 41 against Virginia. I don't think they will. But you're going to have to keep up a little bit with Coastal.
It's interesting. I've just watched the NFL over the first 2 weeks. That's been a problem in the NFL this year,
Yeah.
is teams can't score in the red zone. And you look at the Detroit Lions, they're one of the most efficient offenses in football last year. They can't do it this year. And it's interesting, maybe defenses have changed and offenses and just when Mike Barber and I were talking earlier in the week, we kind of just chalked it up to maybe you're getting a little too cute with the play calling sometimes. Like, Kobe Pace is averaging 3.2 yards per carry in the red zone. Xavier Brown's averaging 4.6 in the red zone. Give him the ball 3 times in a row, and you got a first down or a touchdown.
How about that first series at Wake down near the goal line? Kobe Pace is jumping up and down saying, "Give me the ball," looking at the
Yeah.
sideline. Like, to me, if you got a guy that wants it, and right, Virginia, right, since Tony Elliott and Des Kitching's got there, since they got there, the push has been to have an identity of run the football, get it between the tackles, and make some plays. That's the perfect opportunity to do it, even if it takes you a little bit to figure it out. You got to at least try.
Yeah, and going right off of that, my player to watch is Xavier Brown. Also Kobe Pace. I'll kind of cheat a little bit and use both of them here because, we've talked about it so many times. Tony Elliott said he wants to establish the run in this program, but it feels all too many times that the run is just too quickly given up on, even in a close game. You look at that Maryland game, it didn't really get out of hand until, later on in the game, the fourth quarter, really. You were in the game, but they decided not to run the football kind of after having some success with it early on. And that's, Kobe Pace and Xavier Brown has looked pretty explosive on his carries so far this season, just hasn't had a lot of touches. And so it's interesting. And you look how the grades worked out for the UVA offensive line, much far better in run blocking than they were in pass blocking. So you kind of wonder, like, what are you seeing that you don't want to run the ball?
Well, they're both averaging over 5 yards a pop, right? And I know some of that stems from when Virginia goes tempo. Like, that's something I think that's really worked for them. I think Dev Kitchings has done a nice job of figuring out when to hit the accelerator and put the pressure on the defense. It's helped them drive the field a few times this year, and that includes with some runs. So I think if you can do that and get your run game going to get it down there, just finish the drive with a couple runs and see what happens.
Yep. All right. Time for predictions. Our favorite time of the podcast. Greg, what do you have for your final score in this game?
Yeah, I think Virginia goes down there and bounces back, gets a win. It's going to be hard fought. Maybe it starts a little slow for Virginia, but they'll figure it out, and I think they'll win. Like, I go like 33-24.
33-24. Yeah, that's pretty close. I was going to go 31 to probably like 20. Yeah, 27, 31, 27, maybe. It's so hard. Last week I was talking through scores and I'm like throwing out like, oh, like a straight number with just touchdowns. I'm like, well, that's not going to happen. Like Virginia's defense, you kick a lot of field goals against them. Yeah, so I'll stick with 31, 27. I think it'll be tight, but I also think Virginia might get out to an early lead in this one. And I think that's important that they do because, especially with the home crowd, the environment that they're going to face down there, you want people heading for the exits in the third quarter. Like you don't want them staying late into the game because the later they stay, the harder it's going to be on you towards the end.
Well, especially the way Virginia slept walked through some third quarters this year.
Exactly.
You want to give yourself a little cushion. But I think that's something that's key too. A couple of things we didn't mention. Calandra's got to keep the ball clean. and Virginia can't come out a halftime slow.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't have any specific predictions on how they come out of halftime, but it can't be much worse. It can only be better, you would think. And with Calandry, yeah, I said, you know, looking at the turnovers he had last week, that was the first time I've really been concerned, because those were the types of turnovers that he was throwing last year, whether it was a miscommunication with the receiver or, you know, just trying to make too much happen. Against Wake Forest, a tip ball gets picked off by a defensive lineman. It happens. Or, you know, you underthrow, you know, the route to the sideline. You had a tight window in there. You underthrow it by a little bit. It's a tough throw to make. But the throws that we saw last game against Maryland, those are the concerning ones. The fumble, that's kind of a freak play. I mean, your offensive lineman's big foot comes up and bats the ball out of your hand. You're not expecting it. And it looked like a normal progression for him. So that was the first time I kind of put up the little, you know, the red flag and was like, what's going on here? Are we reverting a little bit? But I'm pretty impressed with him and how he's kind of dealt with that. And according to teammates, you know, he's stayed confident on the sidelines. So I guess we'll see. Tony Elliott said that they spent a lot of time this week talking and going through, you know, kind of what the plays were and with him and Coach Lamb, the quarterback's coach. So I guess we'll see, but that's going to put a wrap on this edition of the Who's On podcast. I want to thank Greg Medea from the Daily Progress for coming on as always. We will see you down in Conway, South Carolina. A lot of teal going to be out there this weekend, but you know, probably, hopefully not some rain. What do you think?
Yeah. No rain. Stay away.
No rain. We'll stay dry out there, and we will see you next week. Thanks for joining us on the Who's On podcast.